This is On Our Campus. The third season of On Our Campus highlights the possibilities and the challenges of battling corruption, discrimination, and misconduct in public higher education through the legal system. Welcome back to our third and final season of On Our Campus. My name is Marty Piercy, and of course, I'm joined by Suzette Grelot. Suzette, please reintroduce yourself.
Because it's been a while. It's been a minute since we were here together, Marty. A couple of years, I think,
almost.
Since we started recording On Our Campus that first season. And so, yeah, I'm Suzette Grelot. I remain a professor at the University of Oklahoma. And I'm excited to be here with you again to talk about the rest of the story.
That's right. And that's really why we're back for this final go-around is to, we started recording On Our Campus at the beginning of September in 2019. And I don't know if anybody out there has noticed, but a lot has happened in the world since 2019.
Oh my gosh, how different. It seems so long, much longer
it does.
Than that, a little over 2 years, but so much has happened. And yet, so many things stay the same.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like a lot of the terrible things, the terrible yeah. institutionalized things have still, continued unabated.
Still with us, yeah, for sure. So,
well, there is not just out in the world, but particular to this ongoing story, saga, if you will. Obviously, the lawsuit, after the lawsuit now, we're post-lawsuit, and a lot of things, honestly, while we were recording, there were a lot of things happening behind the scenes, and there were things that we were not allowed to talk about because of ongoing litigation. Now that that's over, there are still some things that you won't be able to share, some details.
Not a lot. Yet.
Yet. Yes, that's an important part because a lot of what we want to talk about this season is what is free speech and how is that mitigated by powerful institutions in our communities, institutions like, for example, the University of Oklahoma and its Board of Regents and their extensive network of powerful people across the state and the country and indeed the world, and how that is the speech of that institution is somehow considered more important than the speech of a single person who is a part of that institution. And of course, I've got lots of opinions about that regarding whether that's even philosophically tenable for an institution to have free speech as opposed to people to have free speech. So that's something that we're going to cover a lot over the coming weeks. Speaking of, like, reactions to the previous two seasons of this podcast have been varied. I think we've seen a lot of support from listeners, but we've also seen... I'm not going to name names because it's not productive in this case, but one friend of the podcast had to step away and not be involved with the podcast because they were doing a freelance job that had associations with one of the players at OU. And so for her ability to be able to work, she had to stop being a part of this process. That is at its commonplace in this story. You'll be hearing that again and again. What about you? I mean, this is all very, for me, this is an academic exercise, because I care very much about you and I care about equity and justice in this world. Yeah. So it's personal in that sense. But this is largely academic because I'm not involved with OU. I never attended OU. I'm not a partisan for their sports teams. I don't, I'm root for homers, you know, whatever. But so I want to hear about the reactions you've gotten. I know that you've gained some support, but you've also lost some relationships because of this endeavor.
Yeah. Thank you, Marty. First of all, for your care and kindness throughout this process. It has been a long road, a difficult one. Obviously, you know, and I referred to this in our earlier conversations that, you know, when you do what I've done, when you stand up and have these, you know, speak out and expose. So, I mean, we did a lot of exposing. We released, you know, recordings and conversations and documents, and there'll be more of that. And when you do that, you know, a lot of people don't like it. And not just the people that you're exposing or the people that have connections to that power or have, you know, tremendous proximity to the power that you're challenging. Even people that, you know, are maybe riding, maybe on your side of the battle. I mean, you know, people that are supporting your cause, but don't necessarily like your technique, don't like your tactics, don't feel threatened or made unsafe by it,
sure.
Feel that they're unsafe because of it. I mean, there, you know, there'll be a time and a place when I can talk a little bit more about that. And like you said, I mean, there isn't much I can't talk about. There's only very few things, and I will talk about them generally. I did not sign a non-disclosure agreement
in this case.
I think that's
really important to underscore that.
Yeah.
And for those listening, that is a that's a huge act of defiance for somebody who has been treated as you have and throughout this situation, and for you to still like, no, I'm not going to sign your stupid non-disclosure.
Yeah. I mean, they tried. They tried hard, especially Jim Galligley tried really hard to get me to not be able to disparage him, a non-disparagement clause. You know, from the beginning, from the day I was fired, they tried to get me to sign non-disclosures and non-disparagements and take money and just walk away. And I mean, I've lost money. I've lost I've lost a lot of money. I've lost a lot of other things too. But you know, there's just no price that I can place on my voice, on my story, on my experience. I feel that strongly about it. And
most importantly, your integrity.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, this is what happened. I'm going to say what happened to me, what is my experience. And I'm not going to let, you know, anybody at the University of Oklahoma or anywhere take that from me, even though it is very difficult. And look, I mean, we ought to have a whole conversation, where I think we will, when we talk about free speech, for example, is that non-disclosures are used precisely to protect powerful people, to protect the status quo, to protect potential wrongdoings, and, you know, to cover things up. And a public institution, number one, really shouldn't use non-disclosures. Really, nothing should be, you know, barred from being disclosed. If you're a public institution that's funded by public money, they should have to disclose everything.
Right.
And, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, you know, you should have to disclose that stuff. And so anyway, but at the same time, there is this fine technique and legal process that involves confidentiality, attorney-client privilege, protective orders. And when we get to that stage where we're talking about details of the lawsuit, you know, listeners will be able to see here, you know, I'll share documents about it, you know, how institutions and people who abuse power and people who are potentially corrupt use confidentiality and protective orders and non-disclosures, if they can get to them, to be able to cover up what they're doing. And I mean, there are a few things that OU has tried to protect in this case, communications that, quite frankly, it's just inappropriate. And I will fight that. I plan to fight that. I mean, these are things that are subject to open records. And I will be, you know, working on that at some point in time when I can afford to do so.
Right.
But until then, I will only speak about them generally because the judge has gotten involved with this before. And this is part of the reason why we had to stop recording discussions about my lawsuit about 2 years ago, because there was an incident where the university filed a motion for me to not be able to see documents, for me not to be able to review things myself because of their concern about me sharing things. And undoubtedly, which, you know, some of the things that would have been shared would be embarrassing to some people. And I know about it, but, you know, other people should know about it. Other people should know about these things. And anyway, the judge, you know, didn't rule against me or didn't rule in favor of the university in terms of, you know, confidentiality and protection and my not being able to see documents. But he did warn me about sharing information, you know, at the time and during litigation, and sharing particularly information that OU was trying to protect with stamps of confidentiality until I could fight that confidentiality. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and this is a really tricky business. Documents that are stamped confidential, that one party can determine if something's confidential, and then the other party has to fight it. And I haven't been able to fight it yet. And so anyway, the point being that there will be a time when I will do that. And until then, there are just a few things, very little, but a few things that are still, I can only speak about generally. So yeah, so we're here, you know, I guess the why do this is the rest of the story deserves to be told. The lawsuit process deserves to be told. We didn't get to finish the story of kind of the rest of the problematic provost series because I had to hit pause on on the story at the time because of litigation, and so it's time to go back and reveal what happened during that time. And I, you know, why do this? People ask me all the time, like, why? First of all, why can't you just, you know,
just drop it,
just accept it and move on.
Why can't you accept that a huge institution treated you like utter shit and tried to destroy your life? Why can't you just get over that?
So, there are two important points. One is it is very personal. Mm-hmm. What happened to me and about me and about the College of International Studies and about my career, et cetera. But this isn't just me. And I've said this from the very beginning, is that I watched this shit happen to so many other people.
Right.
And I've since, I've even, you know, left my position. I have, you know, was fired from being a dean. I had so many people reach out to me about their own experiences and about their own, you know, the abuses of power and the discrimination. And I mean, when you have the evidence, when you have the information, you know, it's important to share it. It's important
Absolutely.
To be transparent. It's important to try and fight this garbage as much as you can. It's an obligation that not only I have, I believe we all have. And so that's why, you know, that's why I'm here. It's why I'm still here. It's why I did what I did. And it's why I'm going to finish this project. You know, I'm going to finish on our campus so that we know the rest of the story.
Absolutely. And I mean, obviously, your silence would serve no one but the bad actors who are responsible. So I appreciate you standing up for people, because it's not just about you, like you said. So let's talk a little bit about what we're going to be covering this season.
Yeah. So we have a few episodes planned. I'm going to talk about the lawsuit. I mean, as I've already noted on social media, I did lose the lawsuit, at least in the sense that the judge ruled in favor of dismissing the lawsuit, all aspects, all claims of the, in the lawsuit, after OU filed for summary judgment, which is a stage of after you've brought, after you've gone through the discovery process and have collected documents and done, you know, gone through depositions, a defendant will file for summary judgment to basically appeal to the judge to throw out the case. In other words, so it doesn't go to trial.
Right.
I was trying to get the case to trial, right? So OU, the defendants, OU, Jim Galligley, Kyle Harper filed for summary judgment. We responded and, you know, made our case, but the judge dismissed all of the cases. So I will share some details about that process. And, you know, I mean, I learned a lot. I was like, I'm in freaking law school the past right. 2.5, almost 3 years. Sure. It cost that much. Yes. You know, I don't have a degree, but I got a lot of lessons learned in my head about this. And so I'll be talking throughout this final season about that. We'll share some specific details regarding documentation and depositions and what that looks like and the things that were said, you know, the things that actually the untruths that were told mm-hmm. under oath, the truths and the untruths that were told under oath
right.
in depositions. And there's some lessons to learn about that. The documents themselves, the documents that get shared, the documents that don't,
mm-hmm.
The protective orders, the confidentiality, the privilege logs, the things that they tried to protect, that it's just mind blowing mm-hmm. and they got away with it.
Yeah.
You know, they got away with it. And there are reasons why they got away with it. There are things the judge did and that are just like, you can't make this shit up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just, you can't make this shit up. I mean, I still struggle to wrap my head around some of what happened because it's just so ludicrous, mm-hmm. you know? And the thought that this is what you go through when you file a lawsuit and, you know, it's not a cautionary tale. You know, these things, these stories that we're going to talk about, it's to me, these aren't cautionary tales. It's not, the why is not to say, here's what happened and therefore we all need to just, you know, go along, get along, shut our mouths, you know, or to caution people. I mean, I do want to caution people, you know, here's what can happen. But it's a cautionary tale for me only in the sense that this is about one person who
right.
stood up and did this and one person who filed a lawsuit. And the caution to me is that movement, collective movement is required to really fight these battles and to end the misconduct and to change policies and behaviors and discriminatory actions that exist. And I think through telling the story about the lawsuit itself, the legal process, the working with lawyers, you know, details about speech, just protective speech mm-hmm. and what's protected and what isn't, and how crazy it is, how crazy the law is about protecting speech and, you know, what speech is and isn't considered public or protected. I mean, there are whole arguments about what is considered public speech.
Right.
And it's again, mind-blowing. Like, you can't make this shit up. Mind-blowing. Retaliation and discrimination. You know, we're going to be talking about mm-hmm. the fine details of retaliation and discrimination in my specific case, you know, because other people have experienced retaliation and discrimination. And they are so good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I now know in hindsight, after going through all this, I can see how they maneuver
right.
in order to retaliate and discriminate with impunity.
Yeah.
And so we'll be talking about that. And then we'll be doing a very deep dive into the issue of pay inequity.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the one claim of mine, pay inequity, that really surprised me that it didn't make it to trial and that the judge just completely bought the university's argument that they don't discriminate in pay and that there wasn't pay inequity among deans. clearly just did not look at the specifics of the data. And I can't wait to show and I can't wait to share the specifics of that data, because it again, it's like, it's a no-brainer.
Right.
When you look at it, it's like a no-brainer that there is pay inequity. And since then, there have been research studies and commentary about pay inequity at OU, and yet you can't win it in a court of law.
Yeah.
And so what do we have to do? What do we have to do, you know, to address that? And so we're going to be looking very deeply at the issue of pay inequity before we wrap it all up, you know, and talk about some overall lessons learned, some specific lessons learned, some wins and losses and gains and, you know, ways in which we've been set back. And so, yeah, I think that's the forecast for the rest of the season and the rest of the story.
That sounds good. I look forward to really unpacking some of that experience because obviously something unjust happened here, and we need to expose that and really examine what kind of atmosphere has been created many, many decades ago and has been sustained throughout the history of so many of our institutions. We need to really examine those institutions and why we put the kind of trust that we do, and whether or not that trust is placed correctly. I mean, educating young people is kind of a sacred trust, you know, and we really deserve to be able to have some input on how learning institutions operate, especially, you know, specifically ones that are public universities, you know, public schools. Like we deserve to have insight about their operations, like you said, and for an institution to just invest all of its efforts in obfuscating that, I don't think that's acceptable stewardship of public funds or public trust.
Well, clearly the University of Oklahoma and the other two defendants, Kyle Harper and Jim Gallagher, spent a shit ton of money fighting this. And, you know, this is always kind of mind-blowing to me too, is that they would go to such lengths and such expense to try to prove something that is so easily, you know, when you see the data, when you see the evidence, it's so, you know, when you hear the whole story, it's just so easy to just accept responsibility. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess maybe it isn't easy for institutions to accept responsibility mm-hmm. for what happened. I mean, they've obviously not been held and will not be held, you know, in this case, legally liable. Mm-hmm. You know, they get out of that, you know, they get that out of jail free card or whatever, you know. But there was also just so much opportunity to just say, you know, we fucked up. And especially because the people that really did the fucking up are gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, but the people that are still there are you know, carry the torch. Mm-hmm. Onward.
And they're beneficiaries of it.
Right. They were beneficiaries of that system. They were beneficiaries of that, of those abuses of power and that misconduct. And so they continue to protect that system. And so it's just, it's a real lesson in, like, I can't even articulate it. A real lesson in how an institution of higher education, an institution of learning, of higher learning, you know, that is there to educate and change lives and make the world a better place. And I honestly believe that higher education is meant to make the world a better place. And yet it protects misconduct. It protects rapists. It protects those who discriminate. It protects racists. It protects homophobes. It protects, you know, oppressive actions and thoughts and ideas and policies. And so it's like, how do we trust it? This public institution that takes, you know, billions of public dollars, my money, your money, you know, the money of our listeners, et cetera, and does these things with it. How do we just let them get away with that? You know, it's just not, it's not acceptable, you know? And I guess there are things here in this process that I'm like, okay, there are just some things I can't change. I can't change the judge's order. I have to accept it. You know, I can't change it. But there are so many things here that I simply cannot accept and can be changed. And I'm going to continue to fight that fight despite the pain and difficulty of doing so. This is not comfortable.
No.
We've talked about this from the beginning, Marty, when we started this process, is that this is not comfortable. This is not easy. I have anxiety every time I sit down and look at these documents and think about talking, having these conversations and telling these stories. I'm scared of what's going to happen next. I'm scared of the you know, backlash that's going to happen. I don't like having to do this.
Right.
Nobody does.
Right.
But what are our options?
Right.
You know, I can't accept this behavior.
Right.
I can't accept these actions. I can't accept these policies. I can't accept it. So I have to do what I have to do to change it. And I hope, my hope is that we can create more of a collective effort. I've seen more of a collective effort.
Yeah.
I've seen more of a collective effort at OU in the past couple of years. COVID obviously has led many people at OU to become more critical, publicly critical of the university and its policies. And I mean, its ridiculous stance on masking and immunization, vaccination, you know, what, you know, how to handle the COVID process has been just disgraceful. And I've seen more collective action. So my hope is that as we continue to move this ball forward and keep the momentum going, that we will see more and more collective action on these issues.
Good. I hope that we can perhaps get into some of the, at some point, some of the little bit of news coverage that this has gotten, because it didn't honestly get nearly as much attention as I think it should have.
The lawsuit outcome?
Yeah.
Yeah, it got very little.
Well, and in fact, the entire process, I don't think that, not that it's like a groundbreaking thing for somebody to file a lawsuit, but this was a pretty significant series of events. So I do want to talk about what little coverage there's been. And pointing out also that I saw on Twitter this week that for, I don't know, a fifth, sixth year in a row or something, that OU won the Black Hole award.
It was the second out of 3 years, the Black Hole
That's
award.
What it is. Okay, I couldn't remember exactly. I just remember them winning that, like, you know, that ignominious like award of like this is an institution that you cannot get information from.
That's right.
Which is funny, since the purpose of the institution is specifically to give information to people.
Is to create knowledge and share information. I have so much to say about that, but and it'll be coming. But about the coverage, you know, first of all, I think there's a tremendous amount of just fatigue about my issue in particular.
Right.
I mean, there are definitely a lot of people that are kind of like, it's been long enough, just shut up, you know, and move on. And of course, one of the very interesting stories that we can tell about the media is how the media influenced this podcast.
Yeah.
The media, you know, we tried to expose OU's corruption through traditional media outlets. And they were all set to go until higher ups, executives, you know, reporters did their reporting. They had recordings. They had done their work, but were then that was pulled because people like Rinzai Stone were able to make phone calls. You know, David Bourne. I don't know. You know, people were able to make phone calls and convince executives, you know, that that this wasn't newsworthy, that this wasn't, that this is just complaining, that this is just somebody who's disgruntled, that this is just a known critic, that this is just about me, you know. And so we created this podcast because we couldn't get this information out through traditional outlets. And there's a reason for that. And I'm just going to say it blatantly. The media is part of traditional, well, I don't know if traditional, the status quo.
You know, and I'm saying this as a reporter. Independent media is very good, by the way. But yeah, no, you're right. Most standard traditional media is, in its best circumstances, it challenges systems of oppression. But in the climate, the financial state of media today, that just don't pay as well, you know? So, like, that doesn't get the clicks, you know?
And that's what they're looking for on
absolutely.
These things. And there are a lot of people in this state. Don't forget, we're in Oklahoma, and there are just a lot of people that don't, you know, that love OU and that don't want to see the criticism and don't want to hear from me in particular. And, you know, and that's fine. And so, I mean, it got coverage on the conservative side, right? The SCPA put out the Journal Record put out something. I mean, they're the only ones from you know, that really had much to say about it. And
OCPA doesn't count.
Right, they don't.
They wrote a piece about me not saying the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah, right. This is the kind of garbage that's published.
They're not serious people.
Right. And of course, their piece was about how, you know, OU professor gets reality check, and the whole piece was about how, you know, their reality, of course, is that, you know, I did a terrible thing. I, you know, made too much money for what I did. I didn't work hard enough. I mean, you know, they're just garbage. I don't know where the fuck they get these things, but then, you know, they make the shit up. And then that, you know, the reality is that I was overpaid and underworked and thanked my employer by, you know, asking for a fucking resignation.
Yeah, by saying a swear word.
And so, it's funny, I got some personal messages from people who read that piece that were like, yeah, you know, reality check for you, bitch, you know,
wow,
stuff like
yeah.
that. But I'm like, yeah, the reality actually is... I worked my ass off and I got paid less than most of the deans and I got particularly the men. But the main reality is that the law doesn't work for people like me.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have better judges, unless you have better laws and lawmakers,
mm-hmm.
unless we have, you know, courageous judges and decision
yes.
makers out there that are willing to, look at the evidence and not be, you know, swayed by power and proximity to power. That's the reality.
Right.
So, you know, but I mean, I guess at the end of the day, because I know we've got to wrap up this first episode, is that, you know, yeah, wins and losses. Big loss on the lawsuit, really disappointing. You know, it was a bad decision. But, you know, I lost a lot of friends. I lost a shit ton of money. Mm-hmm. I lost, you know, I guess some would say a lot of... I mean, I think I've kept the respect for those that matter and lost respect from those who don't. You know, I lost a lot, but I won a lot. And I didn't win a lawsuit, but I won my non-disclosure. I maintained my integrity. I maintained my voice. Changes have been made.
Mm-hmm.
Gallagly is gone.
A couple of these people aren't
yeah.
there anymore.
Harper is gone. Still there, but at least he's no longer provost. Thank God.
You ever see him on campus and give him a knowing smile?
I haven't seen him on campus because I haven't been back since COVID, since I was on sabbatical a semester. And he was on sabbatical for a full year, of course, while, full year of provost pay.
Oh, my.
For his sabbatical. The highest paid classics professor in the world, I guarantee you.
Wow.
So, you know, he's gone. Rinzai Stone's gone from the board. That was a thing that happened. Of course, Clay Bennett left early on after the blackface incident in January of 2019. And I think I can say a little bit about that coming up sometime soon.
Good.
Harris, Joe Harris and General Counsel Neil Gallahalli, I mean, they're disgraceful. They're disgraced. The OU is more of a joke than it's ever been.
Yeah.
David Bourne, disgraced. You know, we've got this whole Jones Day report about his sexual misconduct that and protect. So, you know, those are important and good changes that have happened. There's still more to do. There's still more changes that need to be made. It isn't just about individuals, although individuals do need to be held accountable for what they do. You know, the change, the systemic change, the institutional change is what I'm hoping that we can make based on these conversations and others to come in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you sort of in closing, I want to give you an opportunity to speak on this one point. Let me ask you just point blank. Do you hate OU?
No, of course I don't hate OU.
Exactly.
I don't hate OU any more than I hate my home state of Oklahoma. Oklahoma is a challenging place to be. OU is a challenging place to work. You know, at one point, I didn't know about all this dirty stuff, and I loved and supported my university with all my heart. I still love my university in the sense that I love college learning. Mm-hmm. I love what higher ed, the promise of higher ed. Mm-hmm. I don't appreciate the way in which our leadership leads the university. I don't like and appreciate how they violate principles, important principles of transparency, of you know, growth and development, and holding people accountable for misconduct. So there's a lot I don't like. No, I don't hate OU. In fact, if I hated OU, I would have just left.
Right.
I would have just gone, you know.
I do think it's remarkable, and I can't imagine the anxiety involved in it, but the fact that you still work there. I mean, after all of this, you still teach there. You believe in that, you know.
I believe in teaching. I love our students.
Yeah.
I love what we do as educators. Mm-hmm. I'm an educator, and I love that. It was my calling. And it's where my heart is. And I love working with students. And that's why I stay. I stay because of that. I don't have to. I can go on and do other things. I have a lot of skills. I own a brewery now. I brew beer. I brew pretty good beer.
I'm having one right now.
You know, so like I don't have to stay there. But I do because this is unfinished. This is important. I can't walk away from it. Mm-hmm. It's just, and I love working with students and OU students, like all students, they deserve better. Mm-hmm. They deserve better than what this institution has given them and what higher education has become. And for the rest of my life, the rest of my career, I will be fighting for better institutions of higher education and a better University of Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, I think that puts a pretty good bow on this first episode of the third and final season of On Our Campus. Please join us next week. We'll be digging deep on some of this stuff over the coming weeks, and I hope that you'll stay with us and engage. And again, I'm Marty Piercy. You can find me on Twitter at RealMartyPiercy. Or at OKC_span. And I've been here with Suzette Gerlot. Suzette, thank you so much for asking me back to close this circle. Thank you.
Thank you, Marty. It's always great to talk to you. And I appreciate your efforts and your willingness to have these conversations and do this difficult work that you do, not only on our campus, but with OKC Span, et cetera. So thank you.
Right on. Well, thank you. And thank you all for listening. We'll be back.
You have been listening to Marty Piercy and me discuss my federal lawsuit against the University of Oklahoma and the legal challenges associated with battling corruption, discrimination, and misconduct in public higher education. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this discussion or answer any questions you might have. You can send us an email at connect@onourcampuspodcast.com or follow and interact with us on Twitter @onourcampus.